Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Bring the sabor with Modelo Chelada, a mouth-watering mix of authentic Mexican beer, bold fruit flavors, and spices. Bring the heat with Sandia Picante or the citrus burst of limon y sal. Modelo Chelada, bring the sabor. Drink responsibly. Modelo Chelada flavored beers, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Well, first half of the show, we get in some very topical, poignant police shooting and police brutality and all that stuff. And then Tom Arnold comes in, shot out of a cannon, fired up about systemic racism, and a vigorous debate ensues. So that's good listening. We got that coming up. And first, I'll tell you about Pure Talk USA. With AT&T or Verizon, maybe you're with T-Mobile, you're probably with one of them. Pure Talk USA uses the exact same network as all those big carriers do. Same tower, same coverage, but at literally half the cost. I'm a customer. You can keep your phone. I kept my phone. They just sent me a SIM card, and you get the same service. I get the same service I had before for half the price. Unlimited talk, and you can text as well. 2 gigs of data, just $20 a month. The average person saves $400 a year. Why? Why cheaper? That was my thing. It's like, how do you guys do this? No retail stores, no billion-dollar campaigns. You only pay for the data you need. So there you go. The customer service is in the U.S., and the CEO is a veteran who understands what it means to serve. So get unlimited talk, unlimited text, plus 2 gigs of data. All you need to do is grab your mobile phone and dial #250 and say the keyword Adam Carolla. That's #250. Say the keyword Adam Carolla and get saving right now.
Well, here we are on lockdown. How are you? It's Booker of the Perez Hilton Podcast with Chris Booker. We get it. We know you're bored. We're still doing shows. We're keeping you up to date with everything entertainment. A little bit of relief from everything that's going on in the world. You could get the show on Spotify. You could get it on your Apple Podcasts or the Podcast One app. Whatever you do, download and subscribe and get the PHP, the Perez Hilton Podcast with Chris Booker. And everything that's entertainment will be covered.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Tom Arnold. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, yesterday he experienced a rolling blackout. His power stayed on, he just drank too much Don Julio with Garagus. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian.
Tom Arnold is the devil.
it's so funny. Everyone's wiring is crazy, right? Like, you know, you take...
some more than others.
Yeah, but we're like dogs. It's like I walk into my house, Phil's flopped out on the floor, you step over him, he'll lay right in traffic. He'll lay right in the opening of the kitchen. Everyone who walk in can just step over him while he saws logs, whereas other dogs are up on the back of the sofa with their eyes bulging out and head on a swivel. And it's like, that's people too, right? We just have the kind of, you know, chillaxing, reggae, listening to whatever's. And then there's the Tom Arnolds of the world who are like, it's almost like, you know, it's almost like we're car tires. All right, let's do this one.
Ooh.
Let's do this one.
Finally.
A car tire will operate fine with 17 pounds of pressure in it. It's not what you want. You're not going to get great mileage, but you'll roll. You can get to working back with 17, 18 pounds of pressure in your car tire. Optimal is 38 or 40 pounds. 60 pounds is too much because it'll work good for a little while. But there's going to be a blowout. You know what I'm saying? And so if you take people, Kalen. Kalen's probably got about 18, 19 pounds of pressure in him. Kind of, you know, chillaxed, laid back. Could probably use a couple of pounds in him for a little more efficiency.
He'll get you there.
Yeah.
He'll get you from A to B.
Your car rolls better with 35 pounds in it than it does at 18 pounds, but it's perfectly drivable at 18 pounds. You're just never really going to get the full optimal value out of the effort. So the engine is what's turning the tires, and the engine it's just going to have to work a little bit harder. My mom and my dad, these things are blowouts on a Space Saver spare. I mean, my parents are flats. I mean, they're people that are flat. They're flat tires. Like, they've squared off. Like, they barely roll. But, like, to be fair to my parents in their prime, they're probably operating with about 9 pounds of pressure in their tire, which is it kind of looked flat, but it wasn't really flat. And you could move the car, like you could move it out of the driveway.
You weren't getting to a service station.
You weren't going to Yosemite in this car. And then there's the guys we all know. We all know the Nick Santoros and the Kevin Henches. At least I all know these guys, and they're Matt DeAndrea's this way. Like, we know the guys that are highly functional. You know what I mean? And those guys they got 38 pounds of pressure in their tire. Like, that engine isn't working as hard to roll along at a good speed. But then there's the people who've got too much pressure in the tire. And so they're almost fighting themselves a little bit. Like, it ain't optimal. It's too much. And the metaphor works because you can be too pressured, too hurried, too efficient in your own way. You know, at some point,
you're going to cause your own blowout.
Yeah, you're going to have to be able to crack a beer and watch the game on a Sunday and then get back to your optimal rolling efficiency on Monday morning. And then there's Mike August. Mike August is like at a 40 pounds of pressure, which is a good optimal pressure, but there's a bubble on the sidewall. Like, that thing could go anytime now. You never know. So it's a defect. It's a defective tire. So think about should we add a little air? Like, I would say, Tom Arnold, we got to let a few pounds out of your tire. You're walking around at 60 pounds in your tire. That's too much. Let a little air out. Let a little air out. And then, Kalen, put a couple pounds in.
Siphon that.
Yeah, take a little Tom's air. Maybe we can get them together with a garden hose, Max Pan, if we can work this out. But some people need, you know, some people are just a little laid back, a little too laid back. They still work. It works. You can get around. You're fine. But it's just put a couple pounds in. You'll have a more efficient experience behind the wheel.
I'm guessing that the overinflated tire people of the world, there's a Venn diagram of pretty significant overlap of sort of addiction tendencies. You know what I mean? With those people who are a little overinflated?
I think so.
I mean, not everyone, of course, but you could see that being a common thread.
Well, I've always said the guys with the addictions, and I've known a few of them in my life and grew up with a few of them, foot was always kind of tapping. Their foot's always tapping. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that. They look. Yeah. They're sort of that dog up on the back of the bed. You know, it's not when they're high or not when they're withdrawn, but just they're always that person.
Their resting state.
Yeah. Yeah. Never, that's the point.
Never seems that sort of comfortable 35 pounds of pressure in their tire. It's always
the drinking or the drugs is what gets their foot to stop tapping.
Always a little pressurized. Yeah. But everyone, think about if optimal is 38 pounds. And maybe you're 36 and you only need 2 pounds, or maybe you're 43 pounds and we just need to back out a little bit of air. But let's just think about getting to that optimal. And by the way, the tires last so much longer when they're at the optimal pressure, just like the person probably lasts so much longer. And you cover so many more miles and you do it so much more efficiently. It's so much more efficient. All right, so there's your metaphor for the morning or the afternoon or the evening. I was watching Hard Knocks the other night, which I always enjoy, and I miss football, and I miss these kind of conversations I used to be on the losing end of in football, and I told Gary just to whack up the, I don't know what the name of the wide receiver coach is, but I do like football because in a world where we're always dancing around everything, like everyone's like, well, you got to understand how that would sound like coming from you. And I'm like, I don't care what it sounds like coming from me. Here's what I want. And they go, I know, but it's how you're saying it. You know, and I'm like, I don't know. I just want something. Can I just say what I want? You know, as I go to a fucking sandwich shop and I go, no mayo. It's how you're saying no mayo. How about just no mayo? What was all the delivery systems that everyone's like, I understand what you're saying, but I have to vet how you're saying it or how it's getting to my ears. Jesus goddamn Christ. This is a problem, people. You're allowed to tell people, here's what I want and here's what I don't want, especially if you're paying for whatever it is you want or you don't want. Yes.
I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not, but Christy's going through this exact scenario, work exact scenario, to your point that it's rampant in today's society. I'll be very general. I'll just say that some feedback was given on certain underperforming areas of the business, and the reaction to said feedback wasn't about the actual nuts and bolts of what needs to be improved. It was feelings were hurt. Like, this person feels humiliated.
Well,
that's a good wake-up call to do their job better.
Anyway, this is still going on. This is a week ago that happened.
Well, first off, everybody, if you're getting feedback on something that needs some improvement, let's not focus on how it's being conveyed to you. Let's focus on what you need to improve, number one. Number two, this is the new world order. This is when you're, you know, Christy's getting old enough now where she has a bunch of 24-year-olds that she has to deal with. And those people think they all get a vote. There's nobody. Nobody's a supervisor. No one's above them anymore. I've said it a million times. It's an army that is all privates, or I think better yet, it's an army that's all generals. Everyone just thinks they're general. They don't realize, no, you're private and I'm a general. And I get to tell you what to do. I'm not going to call you fat or dumb. I'm just going to go, here's what you need to fix. So that is tough. And it doesn't hurt the Christies of the world because she is established. Just like you're going to hear, it's not going to hurt the coach. It's going to hurt the guys who get cut from the team. And they don't get it.
At the end of the day, like, once all this blows over and feelings get mended and apologies get doled out, you're still underperforming. You're still a sort of mid-level, junior level, whatever, and you're not doing a great job.
Couple of things. Also, what people don't understand is you want to be on the boss's radar. You want the boss thinking of ways to make you better, along with critiques and ways to make you better. Do not get on to the boss's list of, okay, I'm not going to talk to that person anymore. Like, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with that person. Yeah.
The critical feedback might not feel great, but it's there to improve your performance.
And that's what you're supposed to get from the person who's known as the boss. But okay. So we'll play this Hard Knocks clip just because I just got wood when I tuned into Hard Knocks. It was a cold opening and this guy was doing it. But yes, and still,
Adam turned into a Cinemax show called Hard Knockers.
Many people will not listen to him, but play it. Sorry, go ahead.
We got to talk about this. This is normal beginning of training camp football. But I'm not going to say, hold, we got time. Because do we really have time this year? We don't have time. I'm just trying to be honest with you. If you got a Pro Bowl fucking safety and an undrafted free agent corner, I want the fucking Pro Bowl safety blocked, and I want to block fucking that. And then if you don't touch a soul with pads on, you won't play here. I don't give a fuck where you came from, what high school you went to, any of you guys, what college you went to, you won't play here. Not for Lynn. Not for Lynn. Not go play for a running back special teams coach and a receiver coach who was a slap fucking undrafted free agent, if you ain't gonna block, I don't give a fuck how fast you are. I don't give a shit how you run in combine and underwear. If you don't block, you won't play here at all. So if you have these delusions of grandeur of running out there on September 13th as that third receiver, get your fucking mind right and get your face in the fan. I'm not asking you to kill Derwin James. I just want you to touch another human being on an inside run play. Are we on the same fucking page? If you want a job, you want to press somebody, block the fucking shit out of somebody. I'm not watching this shit past tomorrow. Anybody who's up for the job, we got 10 guys, we got 2 guys we know at 1,000 yards, those 8 other people compete for that third spot, you put your face in the fan and you block some goddamn body. If you block somebody, you won't play here. If you don't, you'll be gone. The great ones find a way to run block, do all the little things. It's not just splash plays. This game's not played on Instagram. Do what the fuck you're coached to do. I'm tired of this shit. There's life-changing money that lies between you and number 20. Find a way to do it. Like, we got to find a way to, like, motivate ourselves to block this guy.
All right, we got that's Phil McCaughan or whatever his name is, McKeegan or whatever it is. Anyway, he's a guy. Or was that Christy talking to some employees on Zoom? I didn't know. We have a hot mic situation there, Brian?
Yeah, the blocking is a metaphor. She does say blocking and tackling a lot.
Oh, good. Well, look, everybody, this guy is trying to get you to make the team. So maybe your feelings get hurt, but you want to make the team, don't you? Don't you want to be the person that impresses this guy? Don't you want to be the person that blocks on the run play? So, Gina, a lot of the wide receivers think they're there just to kind of catch the ball. But on running plays, they need to block. And
wondering why he was really getting down on those guys.
Some of them do, and some of them don't. And, you know, but if you got a guy out there who can really tie a guy up and do some blocking, you're going to give that sweep a much better chance to get an extra 3 yards. And there's nothing worse than the guys, you know, I don't know, maybe Randy Moss may not have done a lot of blocking when he was out there in formation. I don't know. But the point is I just like the way this guy couches everything. So anyway, I got a little wood and I enjoyed it. All right, let me tell you about JB Weld. You got projects to do at home? I bet you do. You don't want to pay the repairman. Do it yourself. Have a little pride. Big or small repairs, home or garage, ordinary household glue. Well, it's just ordinary. You need something that's better. You need JB Weld. We're proud to have JB Weld as a sponsor. They're great. I know the owner. I met these guys when I was at SEMA a few years ago. Hung out in their booth. And they didn't even have booze. I was just hanging out in their booth talking adhesives.
Wow.
That's big for me. 50 years made in the USA proudly, JB Weld. You put it in your toolbox, your kitchen drawer, your craft drawer. Good for metal, wood, plastic, and more. Don't glue it, man. JB Weld it. You can get it at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone. O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. JB Weld. Chip Hansen is... coincidentally, on the blower, Chip is the owner, president of JB Weld. Good to speak to you, Chip.
Hi, Adam. Good to see you.
Hi. What's it? God, the calendar's all screwed up now. No more SEMA this year, but I guess I spoke to you 3 years ago at SEMA. When was that?
Yeah, I think it was about 3 years ago. And like you said, you came walking by. I think you grabbed us or we grabbed you. It was a marriage made in heaven.
Who was the fella I was talking to in your booth that may have been of like Hungarian or German extraction? Who was it? It was like the polymer chemist guy I was having a funny conversation with.
It was the caterer.
We've got a couple of those, but Jens Sorensen's our VP of sales, and he's Danish.
Oh, Jens Sorensen, yeah.
You were probably talking to Jen. Our chemist is actually Pakistani. His name's Abdul Razak. You might have seen him, but I think you were describing Jen.
I do. All I remember is a peculiar accent and me staring at a wall full of adhesives. Where are you guys out of?
Well, I'm based here in Marietta, Georgia, but the facility and the company was started in Sulphur Springs, Texas. So we kind of use Georgia as our sales and marketing base, and we've got our manufacturing plant in Texas.
Are people doing a lot more? I mean, I know there's this whole COVID thing. The one good thing that may come of this is people sort of heading out to the garage, doing projects, getting to stuff they hadn't gotten, they didn't, weren't going to get to, or they hadn't had a chance to get to in a while. Are you guys finding that?
Yeah, you nailed it. We have been one of the real benefiters of this whole thing. People have been locked down at home, and I don't know about you, but my wife has given me about 8 projects that I hadn't done for several years and said, get these done.
Well, I got to say, everyone, don't live. My grandparents were super cheap, but they were also kind of lazy in their own way. And so there would be a broken plate, like a decorative plate, the kind of plate you display, but it'd be broken into 3 pieces. And it would just sit on the shelf where it should have been displayed on, but just laid down, because the premise was, is we're going to glue this plate back together one day. But one day never came. So now you just live with essentially a billboard, a testament, a monument to your laziness and lethargy, because there was this broken thing. And everyone needs to just, the plate broke, either throw it away or, better yet, get a little JB Weld and fix it today or that weekend. My daughter, I don't think I was telling you guys this, but my daughter is like hypervigilant. She's like 14. She goes to bed. She shuts the door. Somebody turns the light on in the hall, and she comes out screaming at everyone. Like, oh, you woke me up. You woke me. It's like there's a half inch crack, literally, underneath her door. If somebody turns the light on or someone is talking in the hall, like walking to their room, she'll run out and start yelling at everybody because she has hypervigilance. And I was just like looking at it after about the third time where she came out and started yelling at everyone for turning the light on, or Sonny would turn the light on and I would go, turn the light off. Natalia's going to come out. I started looking at it and I went, I'm going to put a sweep on her door. I'm going to put a door sweep on. And I just went to Home Depot, matched up the rubbed brass or whatever the color, the handle and the hinges were, bought a sweep, 36 inch, cut it down to 31 and just popped it on. Now she has this light, this sweep that will not allow light to pass under her door, and it cuts down the sound. And I probably should have put it up 4 months earlier, but it's done. It took 15 minutes. I'm not going to deal with this anymore. She's happy, although she doesn't express it verbally to me. And I don't have to panic when someone turns on the hallway lights anymore. Just get to your shit, people. If you're going to do it, then do it. Or don't ever do it, but stop thinking about it all the time. Sorry, yeah. Chip, I got going.
No, you nailed it. Everybody is experiencing a whole bunch of projects that they pen up, and they're doing them, and we're glad that they're picking our stuff to do them. And it's a real resurgence in kind of self-reliance and having the time to do it.
I do think there is a straight line to sanity. I mean, I hate to go Mike Rowe on all your asses, but the amount of time people are watching TV, staring at their phones, getting all the crazy, there's another shooting and there's a cop shooting and there's a race ride. And like the more time you're spending in that world and not in that garage engaged, not that process, you know, that process of like, how are we going to fix this problem, or how am I going to overcome this? It'll eat your brain, people. You really need, even if you're not handy, even if you're not that guy or that gal, you better start becoming that person. Like, you better go pick something. You better go get a bookshelf from IKEA, go out in the garage and go put it together with your Allen wrench. Or are they even allowed to call it an Allen wrench? I think they have to call it like a hex wrench or something.
It's an Ellen wrench.
Is it? That bitch.
Ellen wrench.
So, Chip, God bless you, and God bless JB Weld. We appreciate it, buddy.
Well, thank you, Adam, and we're happy to be part of your show. I'm hoping you're going to get to Atlanta here and do one of your comedy shows, you know. So,
well,
I don't know if you're traveling this far east, but I see you're out and about, and if you get this way, I certainly love to see you.
I do. I got. We're getting to Royal Oak in Michigan, and then where's the other place I'm going over there? Trying to figure it out.
I know,
we'll figure it out. But hopefully I'll get out to Atlanta, and hopefully I'll get out to Road Atlanta and do a race out there again. Thanks, Chip Hansen.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it, man.
Bye-bye.
All right. So I played you that one thing. I had another thing I wanted to play you guys. I may have the ultimate do not attempt. You know, the disclaimer on the commercial.
Oh, yeah.
The do not attempt.
Usually for something impossible, physically yep. impossible.
When well, your car stands on its front tires.
Well, let's not forget, they're two super insulting do not attempts. And they're both insulting in their own way. There's the Mini Cooper commercial. No, I think it was the Humvee commercial where the guy just drove off the end of the pier and the Humvee went into the water and became a James Bond submarine. All right, so they go, don't attempt. Okay, done and done. Then, so there's the, this is an insane idea, don't attempt to do it, one. Sorry, there are three categories now as I think about it. There's the do not attempt, insane idea. I'm going to take my Hummer and drive it off the end of the Santa Monica Pier and it's going to turn into a submarine. Okay, I won't attempt to do that. Then there is the do not attempt, it's impossible to do, the Subaru commercial where all the cars are riding around on their front wheels pitched up at a 45-degree angle. Do not attempt. Well, that's impossible even if you did attempt to do it because there's no way you could drive a front-wheel drive car or any car and get it pitched sure. up, get the rear wheels off
physics.
The ground. Right. Then there's the super insulting do not attempt, which is, the person is just driving down an empty highway in Nevada. It's like closed course. Do yeah. not attempt.
It says professional driver, like, closed course.
How am I going to get the van home from the dealer? How would I? Do you guys have a flatbed? Like, how would I physically get your product back to my house if I'm not allowed to drive it?
It's a confusing do not attempt.
This yeah. person is
that's
not
the only thing I should be attempting.
They're not on a skid pad, you know, pulling 3 G's and sliding through cones. They do closed course, do not attempt professional driving. A person's going straight down a highway at 44 yeah. miles an hour. I can't
further responsibly.
What can we attempt?
I can't promise to not attempt to drive your vehicle after I purchase it. That much. I'm sorry. I promise not to go off the end of the pier. And I have signed off on not riding around solely on the front tires. But I cannot promise you that I won't attempt to operate this thing I just paid $54,000 for. That's
a big ask.
I may at some point get inside of it and actually go somewhere.
Drive in a straight line.
Yes. Now, I know you use it as a really expensive storage unit, but I may attempt to drop my kids off at their school one day. So you should know up front. I'll say to the dealer, you got to know up front, I am going to drive this vehicle home. I know I've seen the commercials.
Ooh,
I understand
you have to
the
sign
risk.
A waiver.
I didn't hear that.
The do not attempt the thing you're going to do with the, it's right up there with the beer commercials. Like, we can show them holding the beer. We can show them tapping the beer. We can show them toasting the beer. We can't show them drinking it. Really, you can't show it. Because isn't that what you do with a beer?
Yeah.
Almost always.
Yeah. Now, I get it as it applies to tampon commercials, but a beer...
Well, you'd be surprised how many people do not know how to put in a tampon.
Oh, really?
You should absolutely show that in a commercial.
All right.
51% of the population.
And guess what, guys? I don't want to blow your minds, but according to commercials, this is true. The stuff that comes out of your body during your period, not blue.
Oh, really?
Not blue.
Oh, it's
purple. I'm going to rethink everything I know.
Green.
No, it shouldn't be. You should get to a doctor immediately if it's green.
Well, if they're going to show actual tampon commercials complete with the tutorial, I'm going to start DVRing The View because I'd like to check that out. All right. But in the world of, I would say, most improbable, like a new leader in the clubhouse for do not attempt, maybe the Progressive auto insurance commercial with the character Motar. He's the
the
half
he's the black
motorcycle.
Man who's yeah. centaur. Is that a centaur?
They really caught on.
Yeah,
great job, Progressive.
Is that a sort of joke on the centaur or something like that?
Yeah. I think we finally deduced right. that it was. Although,
okay,
Motar involves a motor and centaur. Centaur is not involved man and horse. That's just a different word.
All right. Well, here it is. Here it is, and you can look at it. He's on Motar. He's the upper body of a man of color and the lower body of a motorcycle, and he's at a popular gym, and he's on the treadmill because it's raining outside. He's on.
Oh, he's too.
All right, pause it. Do not attempt. Do not attempt at the bottom of this. Do not attempt if you know anyone or you
any Mozars.
First of all, don't saw yourself in half. Let's start there. You, and weld yourself to a motorcycle.
Right. But if you're half motorcycle and you're half human, you cannot attempt to go to a public gym and climb onto the treadmill. Do not attempt.
One of my many problems with Motor is, Adam, you know motorcycles better than I do. It appears half of this man is simply replacing the handlebars on this motorcycle.
Yes.
Like it's an entire fucking motorcycle and then half a man on top.
Yes, it's half a man and probably 31, 30 seconds of a motorcycle. So they don't, their ratio's all off. Number one.
Well, this would be a good 70s movie with the man with two heads. You didn't do the cool guy who's half motorcycle.
He's reading on his treadmill. He's exercising his motorcycle on his treadmill. And again, you have to put the do not attempt. I would argue sure. When it's impossible to attempt, you don't have to put the do not attempt, but do not attempt. And then the other thing that's weird is the guy who walks up to him is this kind of frail, skinny guy, and he wants to know how long he's going to be on the treadmill. He tells him 20-minute max or whatever it is. But he's wearing, oddly, these UFC fighting gloves, which, A, is weird. Why would you be on the treadmill with your UFC fighting gloves on? And then what were you doing in the gym, skinny guy, with the windbreaker? Look, just play it out. Sorry. And he's got his travel mug. This guy's reading a book.
You know there's a 30-minute limit, right?
Tell that to the ring.
Also, Motar's kind of a douche.
For those
because
born to ride, there's Progressive.
He rarely makes eye contact.
You know, he doesn't make eye contact.
Anyone.
And the guy at the gym goes, there's a 30-minute limit. Like, I'd like to use that thing, too. And Motar's like, well, tell that to the rain. Which is, it's raining outside, so I got to roll for as long as I want in your gym. We're talking about carbon monoxide poisoning. I mean, the guys over
that's
there
a really
on rowing machines
yeah.
trying to work out. So
everyone drops dead in the gym.
Motar.
Wouldn't
right.
it make more sense to show what a badass he is and to not attempt if it was raining and he was such a badass that he just went riding in the rain?
That would be nice. I hope he gets hit by a bakery truck and put in a coma. Because I'm tired of Motar. Looking feels down like, his nose at everybody. Sorry.
It feels like Progressive is now foisting Motar upon us like defiantly. Like, oh yeah, you think this isn't working? Get ready for some more Motar commercials.
Yeah. I would like to address them, and I'd put up a big slide of the Noid from Domino's Pizza. And I'd go, here, there are many other characters have been launched over the year, and they've really just annoyed the public. We didn't warm up to them in year number six. We actually hated them more. That little gremlin that lives in your toe fungus, who lifts your big toe, nail up like it's a hatch, and then dives under it. That guy's gone with the wind,
yeah.
too.
That's
one of the few commercials that hurt my teeth.
That and his cousin, the mucus family.
The mucus family who moves into your lungs. I don't need them either. Dave, Tom Arnold's here, so we'll talk to him in a second. I just want to clean up Dave. Oh, is Dave on Dave, 66, San Marcos, California? Oh, is he up? I got the wrong one. Let's see. Dave?
Mine too.
Yeah.
That was Evan.
Oh, Evan. Sorry, Evan. I was trying to talk to Dave. Let's see. Dave, are you there?
Hey, Adam. This is Cassius here.
Oh, Cassius, the comedian? Or the dead
just
black
Cassius
fighter?
The sometimes caller into your show.
Oh, okay. You're online too. I don't know. My
it's very confusing.
A little whacked out.
I don't even need to be screened.
Yeah, that's fine. What do we care?
A little roulette.
Well, I was. I just wanted to sound off on. I don't hear much talk in any of the media about the ridiculousness of all the outrage over the police shootings when no one's talking about the fact that you know, he was shot seven times in the back because he was leaning into his car and the cops couldn't see his hands. This is what they're trained to do because they have no idea if you're reaching for a gun yourself.
And yeah, well,
there's just and the guy who was shot, the young guy was holding a knife and he was about to walk into like a convenience store. They shot him and no one's talking about the fact that he could have started stabbing people inside the convenience store.
Which guy got shot? Which guy in the convenience store?
What's that?
Which guy? I'm not sure if I know the convenience store story.
Yeah, this one happened just, I don't know, about a week ago,
Okay.
Right before the guy shot seven times.
Here's the thing, Cassius and everybody. We're approaching this from the wrong direction, as we always do, which is, why did those cops need to shoot that guy? And the answer is they didn't need to shoot that guy, especially if the guy was fleeing or especially if the guy didn't have a weapon or whatever it is. And like I turn on the news today and it's like, no weapon found inside the car, you see? And it's like, well, yeah, but if a cop shoots you when you're leaning into your car, sadly, the cop, here's the deal, everyone. Please, here should be the narrative.
Yeah, they are trained a certain way. We have to understand their training if we're ever going to get to the truth of this.
Well, but here's the thing, media. These guys have guns, and their adrenaline is bursting, and they're totally freaked out. And normally something transpired before we see the footage. There was a wrestling match, or somebody wrestled some pepper spray away, or somebody was handled or manhandled or knocked down or whatever. There was a resisting of arrest. Like there's something that
everyone's
took place.
Amped up.
Yes, something took place before the shooting. And what took place wasn't the calmly slide into the back of the cruiser or give me your proof of ID. It was a wrestling match that took place oftentimes before the shooting. So now everyone is in DEFCON 1. Everyone is like highly agitated. The person who fought.
Adrenaline rushing.
Yes.
Thank you for using DEFCON correctly.
DEFCON. Yeah,
most
people get it wrong.
I got it right. I was corrected by Charles. The point is this. Now, at this point, the cops can make a noble decision, which is, I tussled with this guy once, but I'm going to tussle with him again, although the guy gets the best of him the first time. So it seems the second tussle, they might get the best of you again, and or I bet he doesn't have anything in his car or possess a weapon or whatever, or he can do this math. I'm the guy with the gun, and I'm just worried about myself right now. And you go, well, I don't like that. And you go, okay. Unfortunately, that's kind of carved into people. When you're the guy with the gun, if there's a 2% chance that guy's got a weapon in the car, then you use your gun. Because right now, you're the guy with the gun.
And that's how they're being trained also. The whole nation is ignoring their training.
Well, for Christ's sake, what we're really ignoring is
seven times. It's like, quit pretending he was just walking into an open field, and then they gunned him down seven times in the back. They have no idea what he's reaching for.
Look, here's the narrative, everybody. Please cooperate with the cops, even if they're wrong. You have to cooperate with them because they are the guys with the GEDs and the guns. And maybe the training will be better, and maybe community enforcement will be better, and maybe we'll reimagine policing. But for now, be compliant and get a badge number if you feel like you've been wronged, and live to fight another day. Do not wrestle with guys with weapons, especially when there's four of them. That's it. Thing is, like, I'm not saying the cop is right. I'm saying we argue over it was a good kill or a bad kill. Stop wrestling with the cops and you can live to fight another day, perhaps in court. And the part where it's like the cops are wrong. I wasn't doing anything. Yep. Happens all the time. Sorry. This is built in. It's baked into the system. If we're going to hire a bunch of dudes with guns to walk around and try to weed out who the bad guys are and who the good guys are. I mean, it has to happen 1,000 times a minute where someone is like, he jumped into a beige Camry and he's heading west on Ventura Boulevard. Of course, everyone in a beige Camry is going to get pulled over. And if you're African-American and they're looking for an African-American in a beige Camry heading west on Ventura, then they're pulling you over. It may not be you. It's probably not you. Good. Just comply and live to fight another day. There really needs to be a dialogue about this nationally, but the dialogue is just, well, cops are racist and they're hunting black people. That's not going to lead to any, that's going to lead to more black people getting killed and more cops being killed. That's what that's going to lead to. Or if it hasn't already, I mean, if you haven't seen the fruits of this movement, that's what it's leading to. More of this. We need some sort of national protocol on. And it's stupid that we don't. We have a whole bunch of guys who roam our cities and our communities, meaning cops, with shotguns and 44s on their hips and German shepherds that'll tear your arm off. And we don't have any real protocol with like how to interact with them or what to say or what to do. Or we don't know what they're going to ask. I mean, if you take a look at poor Garrigus's guy, Daniel Shaver, the guy who was executed in Mesa, the cops yelled about 300 instructions at that guy. They were yelling different things at him all the time. They're like, on your knees, get down on your face, now put your hands up, now get back up on your knees. Like, that guy didn't
come towards us, stop walking.
That guy didn't know what to do. There was no protocol. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of funny. It's like, they go, police need training. I agree. I feel like the citizens need training that dovetails with the police so we know when the... First off, how many times you see somebody gets pulled over on the freeway and they start pulling over on the side of the freeway and the cop gets on the blower and says, get off on the off-ramp, get off on the off-ramp. Like the person doesn't even know where to go. You know what I mean? I think we've all been there. We've been pulled over. Like, you guys... seen the rollers and been like, should I pull off the freeway? I don't want to get yelled at for going off the freeway. Should I pull over on the side of the road? I don't want to get yelled at for that. You know, what's
we live close enough to a freeway overpass that we hear it, I'll say, six nights a week. You know what I mean? Just pull over, you know, next exit.
Right, right. We don't even know what side of the car these guys are coming to. God's honest. I mean, you sit there and sometimes they come around to the driver's side like you're on a side street. But if you're on a busy street or a freeway, they might come around to the path. You could be rolling down your driver's side window, hanging your head out the window, and the guy's coming around the other side, banging on the glass. Like, we don't know anything. Why don't we know this? Like, why isn't there? Look, you get a driver's license. When you get a driver's license, there's 700 questions about following distance and braking distance and how far before you change lanes should you use your signal? 100 feet, 150 feet? I mean, it's pretty detailed shit. Considering you're going to have a life of interacting with the cops in your car oftentimes, protocol. That's just protocol. If you have people in the backseat of your car, those people should just have their hands on top of the front seat when the cop walks up. Something like that. Some version of that. Keep your proof of insurance. Don't put it in your glove box. Keep it on your visor of your sun visor or whatever. Someone could figure it out. Well, just have a protocol. And then once you have a protocol, that's the protocol. That's what you do. That's how we. And if the cop says this or, you know, says that, what do you do? How do you respond? And then there are things for you to do. Like, you can ask for a badge number. Here's a 800 number you can call with the badge number and punch it in or whatever that is if you thought you're being wrong. Like, let's work it out. Once we get to the part where we've wrestled and the guy's going back to his car and leaning into his car, we're done. It's too much at that point. Now we're asking the cops to be better than they're probably going to be consistently. We're not going to be able to get the kind of batting average we want once the wrestling match is over and the guys are going into the car. In news, you're not allowed to pick it up from after the wrestling match to, oh, the guy was just walking to his car and they shot him in the back. Like, no, that makes them seem like homicidal maniacs, and that alarms the next group even more. And now why should you comply if you're just have a target on your back? If you're going to be executed, why wouldn't you wrestle with your executioner? All right, everybody, let's do a better job at the news with the narrative. The narrative. It's not racist cops shooting black people in the back. It's scared cops shooting people that aren't complying, and it's an overreaction. I'm not defending the cops, but that's where we're at. So let's figure out the compliance part, and then we can move ahead and save some lives, people. If we are, in fact, interested in saving lives, or maybe we just want to keep the narrative going and sell some more soap. I don't know. All right, real quick. Ken has a rich man, poor man. He's been on hold, so I feel like we should get that. Thanks, caller Cassius. And, oh, someone asked me a question of why did I favorite Bette Midler's tweet about saying Melania ought to speak English or learn English or something like that. Because I see tweets I like. I favor them because I think I might talk about them on the on the show. We've gone into this a lot. I'm not saying
it's not an endorsement.
I endorse this. I go, this is something I might want to get into. Oh God, she's still going to pick it. Yes.
I'm so glad this came up because when people started having a reaction to it, like, oh, blah, blah, I thought of you immediately because how many times did you joke about your buddy Ozzy? Like, you made the exact same joke about Ozzy a dozen times. You're like, he's been in this country for 25 years. Jokingly, of course. And like, I don't think Bette Midler is a racist. I don't have a lot of thoughts on Bette Midler, but she tried to make a joke. It wasn't a hysterical joke, but it was a lighthearted musing about the, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the difference is I don't hate Ozzy. I think that's the problem. I think they know it's a joke, but they know she hates her.
Yeah, so that's the problem. Pun intended.
And also, if Ozzy did a 15-minute speech, you wouldn't know one fucking word he said. Like, my thing with Ozzy is, A, he speaks two languages theoretically, but I mean, he's been in this country for 25 years. You don't understand what he's saying when you're going on a lunch run. He's unintelligible. That's my. I don't mind the accent part. I mind the part where I literally can't communicate with Ozzy, and he's been here for 25 years. Ken, 52, Phoenix.
Yeah. Hey. Afternoon.
Yeah. Hey. What's going on? Good.
Hey. Our city is paying out, I think, $500,000 to cops who pointed guns at shoplifters and families and women with babies, so that costs the city $500,000.
Oh, they're paying.
Make the police unions pay that, then you would get change, but we're not going to see that.
So. Yeah, well, look, the problem is there's enough blame to go around. I think the deal is we should just try to start doing things that make sense. And
I could, if we had time, I'd have an interview story I had with the police union 10 years ago, but I think that's too long, but... Anyway, my rich man, poor man thing is counting money. I heard you talking about Ellen's net worth, and I kind of jokingly chuckled that when you're poor, you're always counting what's in your checking account to see if you can cover the bill. Mm-hmm. And when you're ultra rich or in the one percenters, you're always counting and letting people know how much you own to keep your net worth, you know, to show your worth in the world. And it's just an interesting... back and forth.
Yeah, no, I get it. Like, when you have money and you have assets, you do tend to think in terms of like a net worth. And when I was poor, it was like a lot of literally counting dollars. Like, I remember I went to the ATM once. The ATM had a minimum $20. I had $20 in my checking account, but the ATM charge was a dollar.
Right.
It was like,
push over the edge.
You don't have $21, buddy. You thought you had 20. You got 19 if this thing goes through. And we don't spit out 19s. We shoot out 20. So I literally had 20 but didn't have the VIG. And I was counting money at that point.
My wife was amazed at me. I never balanced a checkbook because I always had money and I never overspent. She goes, what do you mean don't balance your check? You know how much you have in the bank? I go, well, I generally know, but I don't know to the $1,000 a dollar. You know, I don't know.
Do people,
it's all relative.
Is that balancing the checkbook? That's a bygone.
It's a thing of the past.
It's a thing of the past, right?
We learned in fifth grade how to balance a checkbook, and I think in eighth grade it stopped mattering.
I was just balancing the checkbook what Adam Carolla was to learning how to edit from Jimmy Kimmel. I was like, nah.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. It's all automated.
Yeah. You're going to have to learn how to cut this audio tape and tape it back together. And I'm like, I bet they'll have a device for that pretty soon. Or I'll just be so goddamn funny I won't have to deal with it. How about that? All right, we'll bring Tom Arnold in a second. First, I'll do Bake Me a Wish. Friend has sent me a cake from Bake Me a Wish, and it felt like a warm, chocolatey hug. So many of us are, they still can't get together. We're spread out. People are at home. And a nice cake from Bake Me a Wish would go a long way. Make someone's day. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a birthday. Maybe it's an anniversary. Maybe it's a promotion. Maybe it's a whatever. But just do it just because. Why not? People use a little pick-me-up in these times. They guarantee on-time delivery. If you'd like to touch someone with a special fresh-baked treat. And they got a lot of variety, many selections. You hop on their website. They're inexpensive, they're fresh, and they guarantee on-time delivery. Visit BakeMeAWish.com. And, all right, BakeMeAWish.com. And use a code Adam for 15% off. That is 15% off. Visit BakeMeAWish.com and use the code Adam for 15% off. All right, we'll take a quick break. Bring in Tom Arnold right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for another ballsy month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes two Vinnie Tortorich approved and invented ultra fat instant energy packs so you don't reach for that donut. Four shot glass ice molds so you can keep your whiskey cold and straight down the hatch. A bottle of Chateau Spill to remove wine stains or blood from the fine silk you're donning. Of course, a bottle of your choice. And the coup de grace, a digital download of the very first basic cable commentary, Roadhouse. This $60 value can be yours for only $25 at CorollaDrinks.com. The Adam Carolla Show presents Tom Arnold's Birthday Cocktail Party for March 6th. Let's see who's here. Rob Reiner. Martin Cove is here. So is D.L. Hughley. And Pink Floyd's David Gilmour. Oh, we're not done. Michelangelo is here. And the equally talented Tyler, the Creator. Lou Costello. And, if he can fit through the door, Shaquille O'Neal. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Oh, jeez.
That is a great birthday cocktail party.
That's good to know. Yeah, Shaq was my next-door neighbor the whole time he played for the Lakers. So
really?
Oh, yes.
What was that like?
It was great. It was wonderful. You know, they usually have the Homeowners Association, you know, they have a lot of rules. Mm-hmm. Like you can't put up giant Superman lit up things in your front yard, but he could. You know, super bad. But it was wonderful. What a great guy.
Shaq, I do find him to be one of the great characters of this modern era. If you really think about what that guy has done. I mean, if you think about what he's done in the business world, what he's done in the commentating world, what he's done. you know, he's a sheriff.
You know? Yeah, he really know he is a sheriff.
I know. He's a very interesting character that I think people turn into a little bit of a cartoon character. But if you really just took his accomplishments and kind of laid them out on a piece of paper, you'd go, this is a super impressive dude.
Right. Now, he's not a Steven Seagal sheriff. He's a real sheriff. He's not, you know, Steven Seagal, who I've worked with too, is a sheriff, allegedly. Now he's a sheriff in Russia or something. But he would go around showing up at things and arresting people or whatever it is he does. But because Steven Seagal isn't even a martial arts guy anymore. Or he wasn't when I worked with him. I was with DMX in that movie. But Steven Seagal, but Shaq is a sheriff.
Well, let me ask this. I'll posit this question to everyone listening. You know, for a starlet that's getting a little bit older and getting pushed out of the business, there's always a way to make a buck. You know what I mean? And the way you could make a buck is you could just find some high dollar guys and kind of take them out on a date. You know, I don't know how much of this goes on in the world, but there's always like you get to go out on a date with and possibly have sex with, you know, Jennifer Tilly. Sorry, Jennifer or Meg. Sorry.
No, voice. I'm quite complimenting.
Jennifer Tilly is one of the best. In fact, I forgot. Jennifer Tilly is there a cuter, is there a more amazing person on the planet than Jennifer Tilly?
Jennifer?
That's me.
who plays my wife in High Holidays coming out this fall. But is there a more amazing? Just watching her Instagram makes me so happy.
Oh, I want to talk about her.
Yeah,
but are you
talking about Meg marrying the guy from the movie studio?
I'm saying if you are an actress and you're getting in your later 40s, early 50s, there's always the businessman who's in his 60s who watched you or rubbed a few out to you back in the day. It's kind of a life.
Are you talking
preserver.
About Kevin Kline and Phoebe Cates?
No, but
I hope not.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay,
at all time.
Who are you talking about?
I'm trying to think of this. It's a get out of jail free card that you could play. Here's what I'm saying. No offense. I'm not trying to besmirch these women.
Because if you're talking about Kevin Kline and Phoebe Cates, let me say this. People love Kevin Kline. He's a brilliant actor.
Everyone loves
him. He's hilarious. And then they go, well, you know, Phoebe Cates was sort of in that one movie where she showed her boobs. And then what did she do? Let me tell you something she did. She was in the movie where she showed her boobs. The one movie. The number one movie where you show your boobs. That scene, she's number one. She's got one number one, and she quit working to raise their children. So she's got two number ones. Kevin Kline, she could have had Daniel Day-Lewis. She could have had any actor in the world. Kevin Kline should kiss her feet every day. And I love Kevin Kline. So she's up here. So when you say about, well, boy, isn't she lucky to be with Kevin Kline, I say, fuck Kevin Kline. He's lucky to be with Phoebe Cates. Anyway,
well,
go
you
ahead.
You just Amen. Finished my thought because that's where I was going. No, what I was saying is, all right, whoever the examples are,
that's
you can always marry some guy who made his bones fracking, who's 71, if you're a 52-year-old actress.
Are we talking about, okay, we're getting back to the
Annie Potts. All right, but here's what I'm saying.
Annie Potts' husband is the executive producer of NCIS New Orleans.
Nobody knows show business like Tom Arnold. But all
well,
right.
I work on the show.
Is your get-out-of-free card for crazy older male actor who's past his prime, go to Russia or go to North Korea? You know what I mean? Like, you get to be a star.
Probably.
Like, what I'm saying is, Tom, if the wheels come off the wagon for you or for I, we can end up cuddling up to some dictator somewhere. And they would be like, oh, yes, I'm the man show. I love the man show.
You know, probably this would be bad.
We just dye our hair and live like kings over there.
That is your ace in the hole. But I got to tell you something. First of all, I'm so grateful that I didn't do the Celebrity Apprentice. No offense. because that's a step away from fucking being in Russia. You have to be buddies with Putin, like Steven Seagal is. It probably should be an action star.
Yeah.
So there's that. You know, but you see guys like Mickey Rourke, who is fine, but Steven Seagal's all in over there.
Is he?
Like, he's all in.
Does he live there?
I believe he lives there, but he sells Russian guns. That's his thing now, which is fine. But he's all in, and he teaches whatever it is he teaches, whatever form of martial arts. And he used to be, it seemed, when he first started acting, his movies, he seemed to be very talented. Mm-hmm. And martial arts when he was thinner, right. But by the time we did Exit Wounds, which is he could barely lift his leg. And
that was the DMX movie.
Yeah,
right?
But that, believe me, you always look for those aces in a hole. But that's too much.
But he can fall back on his singing career, couldn't he?
Yeah, songs from the Crystal Cave. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, well, there has to be some. You have to have that head to go. How far am I going to fall back? You know, or you just got to, you know, there's got to be something falling back, like, you know, there's a million things to do in America before you fall off that cliff in, you know.
If the wheels come off the wagon, Tom Arnold, there's some banana republic where we can go and be hailed as heroes.
But you wouldn't do that. You'll go work in a garage.
I would go work in a garage. But I'm saying there's always that route. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you know,
I don't want to play that card.
You know, you set this up for yourself. You could always go, you know, get your license and become a cop, because you seem to be the friends of the cop, and you seem to have it all figured out.
I was listening
to you earlier. You got all the problems in the world. You're like, no racist cops in America. I got to figure it out. What we got to do is
I mean, I think people need to be trained on how to deal with the cops.
Absolutely.
Cops need to be how to be trained.
You're right.
The
there are a lot of racist cops in America.
But what percentage would you say?
I don't know.
What do you think?
I would say 30.
See, that seems like a lot.
But let me tell you about racism. It's in their head. They don't even realize it. It's systemic. They're afraid of. They have a fear of black men. I'm going to tell you right now. It gets in your head. You see things. It's like Trump. Michael Cohen always told me he's just got this fear and this image, and he's like that old school racism, where you're like, I love black people. They're great at certain things, but they can't, like, of course, run a country or do this other stuff, but you get it from your parents, and I've heard it from my grandparents, and a lot of people have this. Well, they're good at this, and I love them. They're amazing at this, but they can't do this.
Well, this is interesting. All right, so stuff to get into. First off, like a lot of these big cities, like Los Angeles or Chicago, they're not even majority white police force. Like most of the cops are of some other extraction.
But
Hispanic,
that's a red herring right there. I'm going to tell you something. These guys in Kenosha, Wisconsin, for example, these guys come in running so hot. These guys are military. They play a lot of fucking video games.
Their
fucking unions are run by fucking yahoos.
But are we including Hispanic or women or even black cops in the racist cop department?
You know exactly what I'm saying. A lot of white cops in this country are racist.
But
there is a racist culture in this country. You have to deal with that and owe that to. You can't go, but there's one guy that's the chief of police that's
a
black.
I'm not saying that.
That's what the Republican convention is doing right now. Oh, this one guy is, but you've got to deal with it. They may not even realize it.
But I'm asking the I'm asking the question. I don't know what you're saying, in that if LAPD is 60% something other than white. Do we eliminate that 60%?
What I'm saying right now is there are a lot of racist cops in this country. There's a culture of racism in this country. When Bill Barr, the Attorney General, says there's no racism in police departments in this country, that's bullshit.
I'm laughing because I said, what's Tom want to talk about? And Chris said, well, they're not talking politics. There's no
politics. Well, this isn't politics.
It's drifting into it a little bit.
Well, I don't think it's political. I think it's something that we need to all
take a moment and work on. Yeah. I'm not laughing because it's a funny subject. I'm laughing because I said Tom Arnold's going to talk about what Tom Arnold wants to talk about. Yeah. I don't think we're going to be able to.
No, but I listened to you. I thought you had some interesting points of view, and you do have your solutions, but you're missing. You keep wanting to solve stuff. You know, it's like you want to bake a cake without the flour. You want to go, oh, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to do this again, the same thing
well,
again.
Well, how do we weed out the racist cops then?
First of all, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
I think it's something we've been talking about.
And first of all, how old are you? We're 60-year-old white guys sitting here talking about it.
Well, this is interesting because you said your grandmother was racist or...
There's a lot. You hear a lot of that old school racism.
Here's an interesting subject, I think, or angle on the same subject, which is you grew up in a place and in a time, you're a little bit older than me, 5 years older than me, but you grew up in Iowa.
In a small town.
And chances are you probably were around people who are racist.
Right.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even family members.
Yes. Well,
right?
Next door neighbor's dog's name was the N-word.
Oh, really?
A black pit bull.
Jeez, I hope
yeah.
he never got out at
it
night.
It did.
Driving down the road, headlining yeah. out of the pickup truck.
All right. I imagine the signs you'd have to put up on the telephone poles if you ever got lost. All right. What? Answers to... all right, so I grew up in...
Was it a black dog?
Was it a black dog?
Yeah, it was a black pit bull.
Well, I'm not going to offend the guy.
It's a black pit bull.
Okay, I grew up in Los Angeles with very progressive hippie parents mm-hmm. for the most part, mm-hmm. and my family was very progressive, and so I grew up in SoCal mm-hmm. in a totally different environment. So I didn't have racism when I was around. I mean, we didn't have, no one called anyone anything. I had black friends. I hung out. That was my world. We'd watch Roots. We watched all seven or eight episodes of Roots. And then my mom would just look at me every 10 minutes and go, do you see what we did? Mm-hmm. Do you see how bad mm-hmm. we are? Do you see what we did? And that's why I grew mm-hmm. up. And I grew up with my friends, Henry and James Boyd, the two brothers, the two only black guys on my football team. And I'd just sleep at their house all the time. So I grew up. An environment that was like, what racism? What are we talking about here? Mm-hmm. Then you talk to Mike August. Mike August was in Louisiana. And he's like, oh, yeah, there's plenty of racism to go around. And I grew up in North Hollywood. So I'm like, I'm SoCal. Like, what racism are we talking about? So there's an element of where you grew up versus what your outlook is, right?
Right. My stepfather was the chief of police.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I also... You know, but I'm talking about now. I'm talking about
every
one of these situations, a white guy is not going to get shot in the back, me or you.
They get shot all the time.
No.
The cops shoot them all the time.
You don't see it.
I can put foot in. The news doesn't report it.
Well, the news doesn't report it. Listen to me, man. They are cavalier. They're more afraid of black men. They look at them as less than and scary.
But they still shoot white people.
Not like they do black people, like they do black men. Black mothers have to warn their kids before they go out, and that's a fact. And black fathers have to have that talk that you don't have to have with white kids, and that's a fact. And that's not right.
I agree.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. White, that's the bullshit I'm talking about.
But
that's the racism.
I think you
that's
think
not
it's
okay.
at a higher level
that's
than
not
it is.
Okay. Right there.
Well, so here's what I think. I think it happens, but I think the news
focuses on it. It happens. You haven't spent a lot of time with these. Yeah, it happens to the. You haven't listened to people. You haven't listened to fathers who are the most successful people. People you respect have had to have the same conversation with their kids who are sterling. But that's not okay. That's not okay that every mother, every African American brother, every mother of color has to have the same conversation with their babies.
How many people you figure are shot by cops every year?
That their kids are going to be treated differently, less than. That's fucking bullshit. You know why? Because of racism.
But how prevalent do you think racism is in 2020?
Would you like your kid to be fucking yanked out of a car and thrown on the ground because of racism? They don't do that to white kids. That's not okay.
White people get shot and jacked up all the time by the cops.
They don't get treated the same. They don't get treated the same. They don't get treated the same, and you know that. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
That's racism. Okay.
All right. But they don't treat women. They treat women differently as well.
Okay. Let's fix that.
I think they treat them better. So okay, I don't know if
okay,
you
want to
fix
okay,
that.
Okay, but
get them on the ground too.
But I'm telling you, with kids and young people, it's not okay. And then
what do you
if
think?
You're saying women get treated better? Well, then okay. Then,
what if
that's
there was 100% compliance? Like, what if we just had a protocol?
No, but let's have that conversation. If you're fucking have to tell your children, watch out, beware this, and they fucking. Fucking chase them down. They're just treat them. Everything's great. We're all even in America. Everything's all equal, except for this thing, you know. And it's a soul crusher, man. It's a soul. You could do whatever you want. It's all you could be whatever you want in life, but you could have these soul crushing experiences where you're fucking everything is taken out. It's gut kicked.
I'm laughing because. I was trying to take a call about Bette Midler talking
I'll
about
I'll talk about Bette Midler, too.
And I pressed the button, and it was Cassius talking about police shootings, and then Tom got all fired up, and
I'm
now
just
here
saying
we
it's
are.
That. It's that thing.
All right, what about Bette Midler?
Well, she's funny. That was very funny, like you said, like a comedian. Like, you're a comedian, I'm a comedian, Bette Midler. That was hilarious. A joke. But then you said, well, a comedian, it has to be, you made the rule of comedy, like, they can't hate the person to make a joke about them.
Well, they can, but I just mean, it's better, I think we all enjoy a roast when we know that whoever's roasting Alec Baldwin probably likes Alec Baldwin or whatever.
It's hard to tell, though. It's really,
it can be a
you don't
hard.
Really know the inner workings of a person's mind. You go, all these roastees, when you see those old roasts, you don't know for sure who likes who, but you can still enjoy them.
That's true.
But
speaking
also,
speaking of racist, watch one with Sammy Davis Jr. on the dais.
Yes, exactly. They're the best.
The best? Yes. What are you talking about, Tom?
Those old ones are the best. But I have to say, Melania, you know, was a birther. And she never, she corrects a lot of people on social media, but not her husband, who is just vile.
Does she do
so,
a lot of
oh, yeah,
social
she
media?
Says about Be Better. That's her thing, is her social media campaign,
Be Best.
So that's her thing.
Is that for bullying? What
yes,
is that?
Yes, bullying.
That's cyberbullying.
Yeah, cyberbullying. That's her campaign. That's her special initiative.
Is it ever work, whatever the First Lady's initiative is, like healthy lunches or cyberbullying or whatever? Does it ever work? Or maybe it'd be out of control if it weren't for the work they're doing.
Well, if you start now, you're a reasonable. You could critically think when your husband is the worst at something, and he's the most powerful man in the world. He's not just a guy, and he's the worst at that.
Well,
that's your thing. Can you start with? Okay.
Well, maybe
this guy.
Maybe it's a type of thing where you need to have killed somebody in your car to start your mothers against drunk driving. Maybe it's a reaction to being married to the worst cyber bully of all time.
You should acknowledge that. You should say, and every time you give your speech, you should say, You should be. That's a very honest thing to say.
Do it with the accent.
You know, because that's when you really help people. I understand. I am married to the worst cyber bully of all time.
But can you do
the accent, Tom? I can't. I can't. But I am married to the worst cyber bully of all time. So I know that what it's like to live with someone that cyber bullies. I understand this, and I am also cyber bullied. But I also understand what it's like to live with a cyber bully. So I get it, understand everything.
Tom, just to keep it on track here for a second. And speaking of that, so your podcast,
yes,
Two in the Bush with Tom Arnold and Sasha Boggs.
Sasha is so funny. She's a funny, hilarious young comedian, and she started working for me.
Is she your assistant?
Yes, and she lives with me and the kids.
The comedy is I just said sort of, apropos of not knowing that you were doing a podcast with your assistant, most people don't. So,
right.
I said, could you imagine being Tom and Roseanne's assistant back in the day? And then later on when the show ended, Chris said, he's doing a podcast with his assistant, which is just a weird coinkydink.
Yeah.
You guys had an assistant back in the day?
We each had an assistant.
Was it insane for that person?
Yeah, it was. It was. And I recently saw Kim Silva. She came out to visit the assistant that Roseanne and I married on television on Letterman. Larry Bud Melvin officiated it. There was a lot going on during that. You know, she had an assistant, Cabby Lerner, who I'm still friends with. And they all, Cabby, Kim, and Roseanne took a vacation together and took naked pictures and sent it to me. And I think my brother, my gay brother, Chris, still has them. And let me just say about these pictures. You know, it's like, you know, I just got the, I had these videos of Jerry Falwell, his naked wife, and the naked pool boy, which just, I had to just, we just had to show those to get him to be fired from Liberty University. And there was a point where I've got, his wife is, I have to say this about Jerry Falwell's, Becky Falwell. You know, she's cute. Mm-hmm. And if you could squint, the pool boy has got a fucking hammer and a great body. And if you could squint a little bit, you know, I've been a single for a load in quarantine with my kids and my assistant. You know, if you kind of can push them out of the frame, and then Jerry Falwell's in the corner jerking off, if you can push that out, you know, she's a, and I know it sounds a little perverted, but, you know, that's a pretty good, that's yeah. a pretty good thing. And then with your wife, and you love your wife to death, but she should not have taken those pictures, I think, with the two smoking hot young assistants naked.
Oh,
I'm just
yeah.
saying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's like, and I'm also thinking, is this to fucking fuck with me? Like, get me in some sort of trouble?
Roseanne taking the pictures with the hot assistants.
Naked.
Yeah, naked.
And you know, this is before they have evidently had laws against.
They didn't have laws about anything, yeah. it seemed like, about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a gay brother?
Yes, Chris.
If he had a dog back in the old neighborhood, what would the name of that?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. These guys, that neighbor. You know what? In our town, you were either really racist, like hillbilly racist, or you hated the hillbilly racist because they're so fucking embarrassing. You know, and that it wasn't until after I left town and went to the University of Iowa that I said, oh, there's another kind of racism, systemic racism. Like, there was, you either were a full-on, filthy, N-word, every other word racist. That's what I thought racism was. And we fucking hated them. We fucking did, because they're so embarrassing, fucking mouth-breathing. We fucking fought them every day. They were disgusting. Did, you know, plus I was Jewish. And,
Roseanne, she got kind of canceled a couple of years back.
Kind of.
Pretty much
yeah.
permanently canceled.
Well, she's a QAnon.
Is she?
Yes.
Boy, what goes on this dark web that I'm unaware of? I don't know what's going on. I watch.
It's dark.
I turn
it's good
on,
that you're protecting yourself.
You know what I do? I go to bringatrailer.com, and I check and see what used cars are for sale. And then I answer a couple of tweets, and then I leave the house. I have no idea of all these groups and all this stuff. Is Roseanne into that?
Well, yeah. You know, before...
How do we know she's into that?
Well, I'll tell you how. I mean, she says it, but But before the show came back, you know, she had a lot of, she put a lot of stuff out there. So it seems like the ABC people would have been, hey, we're aware of the stuff you put out there. She'd already written every member of Congress saying John McCain was a traitor, and the Boston the bombing was a false flag. You know, so she was already all in with these QAnon crazy people, and so. You think they would have said, okay, zero tweeting or whatever. So, you know, and so during that time, my former stepdaughter reached out to me and said, well, what could you help us? And my solution was very, and so I investigated. You know, I had the Vice show, so I had people that could, mm-hmm. you know, and I hosted the gaming convention. So I do know people, young people that could hack, you know, that. So, you know, she had a following a couple just total tool douchebags that are these guys that think they're prophets. And so I got very involved with their, you know, stuff on the internet. I got involved with their stuff. And
First off,
but yeah, she was.
She does she need money? Is she set for life?
I have no idea. I do.
You do.
She should be separated. She got probably $200 million, and it re-syndicates every 5 years. So, you know, but again, I said there was a night when I'm like, and her boyfriend, my solution for what when she started tweeting was simple. Go fucking take her phone and throw it in the fucking river. Like, there's no way I would have let her tweet. Mm-hmm. You know, because she, when I was with her, like, she would want to quit the show every day. And, it was always a battle. And I always knew you would be so mad at yourself if you quit this show. And so, I would tell, at one point, I sent her, my ex-stepdaughter, a phone that went to another server. So her tweets go to this other separate server mm-hmm. before they went up in the air. And then I said, hey, just tell her Donald Trump doesn't do his own tweets. There's a million solutions.
Right.
And then one night I was like, I was going to go over there to her fucking place and just take it. You could shut her Wi-Fi down. There's a lot of...
Where is she?
She wouldn't even know. Well, town? I think she was in El Segundo when she was filming. That's the way I got it. And her boyfriend is so fucking lame. Who fucking lets... You know, you shut it down or what?
Can you shut, if you're Roseanne's boyfriend, can you shut her down?
Yeah, you could shut down her fucking ability to tweet, I'll tell you that.
Do you think?
Because she couldn't figure out what you're doing. Okay. I promise you, there's a way. But ultimately, you need to just shut her down for short periods of time and then she'll come to her senses or have a very positive intervention with positive people.
How is her? What do you think of her mental state right now? Do you think?
Well,
she's
I don't
okay?
know. I mean, yeah, she's fine. I mean, to blame that is in her show. You know, shows have runs, but people don't remember the show got canceled the first time. John Goodman wasn't on it the last year of the run. Mm-hmm. He'd quit. So, you know, I don't. She seems to be having fun. Her son is filming her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He films all that stuff. So there's an awareness to that's further, you know, it. And so I think she's just like any Trump supporter, fucked up.
We're stand up with her. We're stand up with you.
Well, I love it. I love doing it. I would be doing it if I could right now. I love doing it.
Would you be, if this was a normal non-COVID year, would you have a whole bunch of dates all over
I would.
The country?
Yeah.
How many dates would you do a year?
Every other week at least, I'd be somewhere.
Go out somewhere.
Yeah, because I have the kids, so I'd do as many as I could at least.
How old are your kids?
They're 7 and 4 and a half.
And divorced now?
Yeah, divorced. Yes.
Did you get to keep the house?
I did. I didn't. I sold the house, and very much downsized my life. And in February I had a massive organ failure. I don't know if you know.
No,
that.
I did not know.
And I was
that.
On a. Life support for 11 days, and but I'm fine.
What happened?
Well, I think it was a combination of I had a really bad flu and a virus, and I think
the virus or a virus,
the virus.
And, oh, you did.
But I also was the stress of this stuff with the kids and.
Have you been tested?
There wasn't a test when I was there, but I go, you know, a part of the test for
Oh, you're part of the group.
Yeah, I am. And you know, I'm very close to the hospital because that's where my children's heart camp is, a big camp I have. And so I'm over there back and forth and very lucky got my, I'm very lucky. Yeah, very. But I also felt like it was. I just put the kids in their mom's car to go to. We hadn't seen her in a little bit to go to parts unknown. And I remember that night I was sitting there like, okay, we're in a guest house because I had to move out of our house and kind of. And I was like, okay, I've tried to calm down like I do at the end of every day usually. And nothing was. I was like, phew, phew. It seemed to be very. And then I'm so glad I didn't go to sleep because I was like, I'm going to make myself go to sleep. And I was like, no, this is – something's different. Something's different. I'm going to call an ambulance. First, I was going to drive myself to UCLA. Then I thought, no, I should call an ambulance. So anyway, they came. And first they came and the person I was staying with sent them back. They thought they'd come because the dogs or – it didn't say ambulance. It said fire something. Mm-hmm. And then they came and by the time they came, I was having trouble talking. I was because I wasn't panicked, but I was like having trouble with my lungs. And then by the time I got down there, I usually would call ahead and say to this person I work with there, I'm coming in, I didn't do that, and so they didn't have my pseudonym. with all my information.
Oh,
so,
oh your name.
So it was took me right. a little bit, and my organs shut down pretty fast. I mean, fast. So by the time I woke up, you know, I was on the ECMO machine, which is a heart and lung thing, and then my kidneys, and then, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, my gay brother was out there
with his dog.
He was assuming it with his husband. Yeah, I think he was assuming I was dead. He wow. does have a dog, doesn't? And people were, you know, my manager Eric Kritzer had already working on jokes for the funeral, but I just said, and by now the doctors who are the top, you know, the cardiologists because the kids camp that had gotten over there, and I said, what do I? And the, you know, the doctors that were working on me are like, buddy, you are lucky to be alive if you live, and your life's going to be so different. Like, you're going to go from here to a residential thing because your heart, your whatever, and there's going to be no more, basically, what I heard was no more playing with your kids. And so when my guys got there who are very, you know, they're a little more, I said, what do I have to do to get out of here? And they said, these are the numbers on each machine you have to hit. And 2 weeks later... Yeah, I was also a terrible patient. They wanted me out of there.
What? You?
So I hit the numbers. And...
So what if you didn't call the ambulance at that particular time? Like, what
no,
if you
I'd
just gone to bed?
I'd be dead. But I think I knew, like, I've always had a sense. I mean, I think you have a sense of, I'm very lucky. I'm lucky to know that I'm lucky that I'm very grateful to the people there, the hospital. I'm grateful to those doctors. I'm grateful that they're my... That I'm blessed. I've had those kind of people in my life. I'm grateful that the ambulance came a second time.
What you know? I don't always picture this when I think of you. I picture you at age 19 or something, working at like the Hormel mm-hmm. factory in Iowa, where they're making the ham, mm-hmm. and you taking that knife out of the hot water and cutting a piece of. Pork mm-hmm. and cooking it in the hot water. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess the sous vide now is what the
yeah,
people doing.
Fancy.
But Tom was doing the hillbilly sous vide. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the name of my next book back in the day. But I'm kind of picturing it, but I don't know if I have it pictured just right. So tell us that sous vide hillbilly.
Well, okay, I'll tell you that. But I want to say this about calling the ambulance. It's because I'm a father. Because then you don't have any. If it was just me, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to sleep. This could be. Okay, but then I think once you're a father and you know, fuck, I got I got this responsibility. You just look, you think of things different,
right?
Anyway, ham bone department, you know, we were fat and hams on the ham, you know, on the ham
What's
line.
Fat and hams.
Well, that means you've cut the fat off the hams with the electric knife, the circular knife. The fat. There's a guy up top that skins them, spins them with the long blade. And then it
Are
comes
you 19
down,
you, or 20 at this?
Well, I started there when I was 18, but I started livestock, which is a shit job. And then I moved inside to the kill floor.
Right.
And the kill floor is, yes, the kill floor is the worst place.
Poor Jewish Gina sitting there going,
we slaughtered 6,000 hogs a day. It's
6,000 hogs
yeah,
a day.
You got to make your own fun.
Not there. Kosher.
Yeah. Not kosher at all. But, you know, my grandpa had worked there for 45 years. So it's a lot of Jews. There's a few
racist.
Jews in there. So... But then I got to ham bone, which is a little nicer, and refrigerated, so it's a little cooler. And so the curating one hams are the Hormel's number one, the thing they're most proud of. So you have to skin them, you have to fat them, which is really defat them. You got to get two quarters of an inch of fat, like it's perfect. And then once in a while, I cut a big chunk, and then you have these boiling hot cauldrons to stick your knife, your circular knife into to make sure it was clean. And I cut some chunks of ham off right off the ham, and I put them in there and cook them. And then we'd eat.
Sous vide?
Yeah,
back
very
in
nice.
The day.
Yeah.
God, you know, it's so funny when you have a shitty job, and I've had some shitty jobs, you don't think, I got to get out of here. You think, I got to get from the slaughter yard inside,
right?
You know, and then once you get inside, you got to go from the part where we're gutting these things
right.
to the part where I'm fatting them. And you keep, you don't think in terms of, I get the fuck out of here. Like when I'd be on a construction site digging ditches, I go, I got to get to the point where I'm carrying drywall.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
digging
absolutely.
Ditches, you know, but you don't really think bigger, which is I got to get out of here. When I worked at McDonald's, like I got to get to the cash register from the grill.
Yes, exactly.
But really what you need to do is get the fuck out of there.
Because livestock was all shit, literal shit all over there. Shit, and there's abscesses, and you're dealing with those fucking hogs, and you know, you got to run them up the chute to get electrocute them, and then you got, sometimes you got to fucking, you know, shoot them in the back of the head, and there's shit and abscess everywhere. You get inside the kill floor, yeah, it's fucking horrible, but then you get into Hambone, and then you get into the smoke shop, because everything's cooked there. And then you can fuck it. It's a little, it's a better pace because that's where the bacon is. And that's where the fucking, and that's a little more elite.
And you can start bringing home the bacon.
Oh, for no, you do. You just got to be crafty because you got to keep your car parked a certain place. And there's not as much supervision because a lot of that's night work.
Ah.
And if you could hang out and do the night work, like when I started college, I was day college and then night work there. You could kind of figure out ways to slip, you know, you park your car a little closer, you do stuff and, you know, you just got to work things out.
How much bacon stealing were you doing at the height?
A lot. I did it at all my jobs. And in fact, when I went to Iowa City, I worked at a place called Paul's Discount. And I made amends to all these people. I made amends at McDonald's, you know.
What'd you do? How'd you do that?
At McDonald's? Well,
how'd you make amends?
Well, I called up the owner who made a big donation to the Ronald McDonald House. He cried when I called him.
Really?
Yeah, then I played him on Saturday Night Live. Kevin O'Brien, we're still very good friends. He was shocked that I'd stolen so much. I stole to get one game box with 6,000 game tickets, you know, like for free. You know, probably some money. You know, they only give you one little pocket when you're on a cash register, and you really got to be a fucking genius. You got to really work your numbers.
Wearing your uniform.
Yes.
When it used to be a lot of cash.
But you also have to figure out what you took out of the hopper that was in there too long that you threw away, You have to add that money up and go, I'm taking that amount of money out of the cash register, and I'm going to say I threw away this one thing. What is that total? Because your cash register has to be perfect at the end, so you have to subtract what you allegedly threw away and didn't sell.
Yeah, so we, as you guys know, they have the hopper with the grow light over it, and sometimes, in my case, somebody ordered like 26 fillet of fish and never picked them up.
Right.
You know, and then if it sits in the hopper with the heating lamp in it for more than an hour or 2 hours, or whatever the time is, you got to throw it out. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to pocket cash, you got to figure out what's in that hopper, what the cash value is, and it's got to balance out. It's got to zero out at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But they let you work the register. I had to work the grill.
They just said, but he also, there was an issue. I remember him staring at me, watching me, because I was a suspect. And he kind of stared at me, watched me from behind. And the pocket was small, and my ass is so big, it was tight. So I really was aware of him staring, and I really had to be clever and figure out things. But he's such a nice guy. He owns all the McDonald's in Iowa City, him and his family. One of the nicest people I've ever met, Kevin O'Brien. But
it's amazing that Tom Arnold was a heavy-set kid with his job at McDonald's and at the Hormel ham factory. But
I wasn't heavy set for Iowa. Let me just say this right now.
Oh, for Iowa.
Not at all.
Yeah, you weren't Iowa fat. Yeah. But you were definitely Venice Beach heavy.
Yeah. Well, Paul's Discount, what I would do is, Paul's Discount was a sporting goods store and everything. We had guns. We had bullets. We had every kind of sporting goods. And what I would do is I made a deal with my buddy who drove a beer truck.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come and drop off 50 cases of beer. Cubby is his name. He also worked at the big bar there, Doormat. He got fired for this, too. But he would drop off 50 cases of beer on Friday night before an Iowa football game. And then my deal was people would come in and I'd be working. They'd put different things in a shopping cart, what they wanted. And that was the deal. It was kind of one of my things.
Did you buy beer at Paul's as well?
No. Okay. No. But then they put what they wanted in a shopping cart. And at the end of the day, I would make sure that I got everything out. And I had a big – they sold these famous big gym bags.
Mm-hmm.
And every day I went to work with no big gym bag. And every night I went out with the gym bag, with a new gym bag, but it was full of stuff. So it appeared like I'd bought one gym bag. It appeared I was bringing the – nobody knew because there was a different manager when I came in. And then the night manager always gave me a ride home. So – as we got up to the front, he would click off the security thing because I couldn't get all the security bands off of the stuff. And I had a thing at home to take them off before my customers came over and picked up their stuff.
What was in the gym bag?
Oh, everything. They'd come and get bullets and weapons and whatever. Sometimes gas lamps and stuff. Everything. Whatever they wanted, they put it in their shopping cart. I'd put the shopping cart, golf clubs. I had to run those out to my car.
They'd shop it. You'd put it in the duffel bag.
Or else run it out to my car during my shift if they're like golf clubs or some wouldn't fit in there.
Hey, if Tom goes to the back of the shop, can someone kind of keep an eye on him?
No. But I called them. I made amends to them, too, and sent them a whole bunch of money.
You're like an international Iowa jewel thief.
But it was so nerve-wracking. If we walk up to the front, the managers were so nice. I'd get right up, and I'd be right behind him. He was giving me right home, and he'd click off the security right as I got up to the front.
How do you make amends with that? Because how do we estimate how much in merch you lifted from Paul's?
I sat and I thought about it. You know, it's when I first got sober, and I wrote a letter, and then I called people, and then I sent them more than I thought.
What did you figure?
$10,000. That it was. To the wrong way.
Was that all part of what is that seventh step? Eighth, what step is that where you make amends?
Seventh.
Yeah, I think I've had a few people make amends to me.
Yeah, and you know, think about amends. People are like, I have to make amends to you. No. You don't make amends to somebody and make them uncomfortable.
Oh, step nine. Sorry,
I'm sorry, but you don't make. You think I know? But you don't make people like there are people that take this program and go. And make people so uncomfortable. You know, if somebody is hurt, you could also go, no thank you to people.
I tried.
Yeah, well, no, you could do that.
I think Margaret Cho did it to me at Kathy Griffin's party. And it's like, we are cool. She
It should be at a party, but she wants to do it, but real quick. But it should be more of a formal thing.
It should be more formal.
But, yeah.
I don't know if I would have accepted the invitation because my feeling with everyone is everything is always like, yeah, no problem, moving on.
You also write about it and also about your resentments on people, you know, because a lot of people have hurt your feelings. You got to deal with that. But that's
how long your step nine must have taken a number of years.
Well, no, and you do that. And
you had to reach out with a lot of business owners and ex-girlfriends. Owners, neighbors.
You know.
Not the one with the N-word dog, but I mean, there must have been a lot of people you had to make amends to.
Well, there was, and then you have to redo it every 5 years because you think, I've got it. Well, you know, you try to redo it every day. You try to say, wait a minute, or every moment you go, wait a minute, was I out of line there? Was I too? I'm sorry.
How long have you been sober?
I've been sober for over 3 years. I had a, I was taking benzos the last,
How are you doing now? What's the protocol now? Like what time do you get up? What's the exercise?
Well, I have kids. I don't have enough exercise, but
what about doing in the the wellness department? Is there any meditation going on?
Yeah.
Any herbs that are being consumed?
No herbs at all. I mean, the kids and I we exercise, we walk. You know, we're quarantined, so. We try to eat healthier every week, you know, because of all, you know, some. I'm trying to make my organs healthier and healthier. I go back to the hospital every other week, and that's something that, we try to. I mean, I'm very grateful about my life. I love every day and just try to be a little healthier. Sasha is a very healthy person. It's good having a woman
comedian
in the house, and she's extremely healthy.
Oh, that's good. All right,
I don't know. I'm just being a dad. It's a lot of work. I will tell you that.
Are you doing a split custody thing?
Yeah. But they're there a lot. And when I have them, I have them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went their schooling has mostly been with me. And
all cyber schooling now or whatever?
We do cyber schooling.
Yeah.
And it's a little more difficult than you think, plus to keep them interested.
Yeah.
We got a little schoolhouse, and, you know, I'm not a fan. My little girl, I didn't want her to even have to do it this year. Preschool seemed stupid last year.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny when you have kids and they end up, like, everyone tells you how important preschool is or whatever it is, and they end up just sitting in a circle looking.
Well, it's a baby's daycare, like, for the rich moms.
They're not learning anything. And this whole thing is like, they're not going to adjust. They're not going to be able to interact with human beings because they weren't exposed to them when they were 3 and a half. Like, I bet they'll figure it out.
They also love being with their dad. You know, I'm 61.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom was just fighting, and this and that. And I said, listen, I'm their dad. I'm 61. I you know, my dad was 18 when I was raised by a single dad. And when he was 22, he had a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old. And we always thought our dad was boring. And I look back on that, and I want my kids to have as many memories. And we do adventures like this summer. It's like, you should sign them up for School of Rock Camp. And I said, my house is the fucking School of Rock Camp. They make films. We made a video. My kids love the music they love. If you listen to it, it's harder than probably your parents allowed you to listen to it and stuff. We made a video. You got to check it out. Big Wasabi. It's on Sasha and I. We bleeped out the words for the kids version. But it's really what's going on in my house. Because everybody calls me and says, my rabbi called and said, hey, I just want to see how you're doing. I see you're living with your, are you guys fucking? They ask me and Sasha, everybody, all my old friends. I go, no. But they go, I didn't think so because she's 30 and you're, I go, no, but we could be.
Did your rabbi, did you say?
Well, yeah, well, the guy from the Jewish rehab. I go, no, but we. I could. Don't think I couldn't do
worst
it.
Worst home improvement show on Discovery. Jewish rehab.
No, but people think.
You should put a light bulb in. You should put the light bulb in already.
But I could,
coming next on Jewish rehab.
I could.
We're out of mustard already.
Guys.
Adam.
Yeah. Sorry.
Before we let it pass, Tom briefly alluded to playing his former manager on SNL in a sketch. That's the great sketch with Phil Hartman where he's Bill Clinton at McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now we have to see it. Thank you. And historian.
Yes.
SNL historian Brian Bishop. And with our own Rob Schneider standing there. Yes.
Farley's on it, too, I think.
Do you have a clip to play?
Oh, my God.
We'll find it. All right, let me hit Dodge here. This is summer to take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. Drive home any 2020 Challenger, Charger, Durango, and save a bunch of money. $10 per horsepower is basically how we're going to do this. Charger SRT Scat Packs, 485 horsepower, and that would then equal $4,850 off. The lineup includes the most powerful SUV ever, the 807 horsepower Dodge Challenger SRT Superstock, and more than just power, first domestic brand to rank number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year as per JD Power, and they are the gold standard for this stuff. So get your local Dodge dealer this summer and take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars while it lasts. Never been a better time to join the Brotherhood of Muscle with Dodge and take advantage of all those savings at your local Dodge dealer. All right, we got the clip, I think. Yeah, so it's just you paying homage to your old
owner. Yeah, that's good. This guy's good.
Owner.
You got here.
It's a 6-minute
sketch. All right, that's a quarter pounder with cheese, 2 fries, and a Coke.
That's Phil as Bill.
Yeah, Phil's the best, most talented person ever on that show.
Oh, I right, completely boys. Agree.
Let's stop in here for a second. I'm a little parched from the jog.
Sir, we've only been jogging for 3 blocks.
I remember this.
Besides, Mr. Vaughn asked us not to let you into any more fast food places.
Well, I just want to mingle with the American people, talk with some real folks, maybe get a Diet Coke or something. All right, fine. But please, don't tell Mrs. Clinton.
Kneeling.
Jim, let me tell you something.
Yeah, that's good.
Great.
There's
going to
be a whole bunch of things we don't tell Mrs. Clinton.
The great sketch.
Food is the least of our worries, okay, buddy?
Oh, my God, it's Bill Clinton.
Oh, my God. Hey. Oh. Hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. How are you? Oh, that's an adorable baby. What's your name, sweetheart?
Her name is Shakira.
Shakira. That means African princess, doesn't it?
Oh, why, yes.
Well, she certainly is beautiful enough to be a princess. Say, you gonna finish these fries?
No. You want some?
Well, if you're not gonna eat them. Those are good. Don't you care? You take good care of your mom now. Hi, how are you? Hello. Good to meet you.
Wonder what's gonna happen next.
Hi. How are we doing over here?
Not too shabby. Holmgren Hardware. We voted for you, sir.
Well, thank you, Les. So you own your own hardware store, huh?
Yes, sir. Since 1972.
Well, good for you. You know, we want to create a network of community development banks to lend money to small businesses like yourself. I see your boy doesn't like pickles.
Nah, he hates them.
You mind? Thanks, Bob. Well, good luck to you. I'm going to wake up every morning thinking about you.
Thanks.
Oops, forgot one.
Hi, Mr. President. I'm Kevin O'Brien, manager.
There
of
the he
store.
Is.
Hey.
I just want to thank you for stopping by again.
Well, thank you, Kevin. You got a real American family place here. Is it too late for an Egg McMuffin?
Well, normally we stop serving breakfast at 11, but for you...
Thanks so much.
Hey, should I scare up some of them big, greasy sausage patties you like?
You read my mind.
Okay. For a McLean burger. Or a garden salad would be nice.
Governor Clinton, I'm a sophomore in college, and I may have to drop out because my parents can't afford the tuition.
Speak of the devil, that's one of those McLean sandwiches, isn't it?
Yeah, would you like to try it?
Well, maybe just a bite.
All right, we get
all right.
It.
All right.
Phil Hartman
Phil
will
Hartman
be
Phil Hartman is so brilliant.
Well, not only is he brilliant, but he literally doesn't miss a syllable.
Nothing... Props.
And from a technical point of view, if you care to watch the sketch all the way through, he is taking monster bites of those fucking sandwiches and burgers and still going. Like, they should have the foresight to give him some water because he's like chewing and still hitting all his beats.
Yeah.
Is it? I might be wrong. I haven't seen that sketch in years, but isn't that one of the very few times he actually breaks because he's eating so much? Mm-hmm.
Intercepted by warlords.
I got to say that, you know, there's two parts to doing a sketch. One is memorizing the dialogue, and the other part is when to get up and move and where to land and where to be sort of facing out toward the camera and not sort of turning your back to the camera, and like when then to get up from one table, leave, go to the next table, sit down, then when to get up because there's other people are entering. There's a lot of moving pieces, so it's like you're using sort of two parts of your brain. You're using the dialogue part, which is trying to memorize all the dialogue. And then the other part is then what prompts me to get up and go. And then where do I stand? And if you go walk too far and don't hit your mark and you're standing 4 feet from where you should stand, then it fucks up everyone else who's coming in and the cameras, all the blocking and stuff. So the idea that Phil Hartman can do it, and you don't have, you know, this isn't like you're doing a play and you're going to, you know, you're going to be off Broadway for 3 years. Like, right. This is one and done. Like,
and he's also got all those props.
Right.
He's got his hands are moving. He's got all this stuff. He's eating. He's got different. And Farley had one line. Farley's sitting anchored in the corner of the table, and he stuttered on his one line.
Right, like, one line. Right.
Oh, and Phil Hartman's the best ever.
I have great respect for that guy's ability.
Yeah, I loved him. He was such a lovely...
And he also, by all accounts, is a lovely guy, right?
He was an amazing human being. Loved him. It was a lot of fun.
He shall be missing. Good...
Yeah. Are this are you doing stand-up? Are those places open?
Yeah.
I got to get booked there.
Tempe, Arizona, are great the places. Improv, September 18th and 19th, and then Salt Lake City.
Oh,
Wise
my gosh,
guys.
I got to... I have to... Okay. I didn't know there were...
When's the last
stand-up?
Time you did stand-up?
Probably January. I thought everything closed.
Mm-hmm.
I think I assume everything is closed down.
Now you can travel around.
Oh, gosh.
And stand up.
Good.
And then the question. And by the way, whatever that ring rust you think you might have, it doesn't really happen the way we thought it was going to happen.
What's that?
Everyone, all the comedians thought you take a few months off, you get out there, you're going to have trouble,
right?
Because they looked at it like you're a boxer who's not been in training camp, and you're going to have like the ring rust. Everyone I've talked to, including myself, says, nah, just go out there and just get right back on.
Yeah, but you get
it.
To do this. You know, you are fresh always.
Maybe, but you get to make videos with your kids.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true. No, that is something.
All right, let me hit Simply Safe, and then we'll break and do some news with Tom Arnold. No one should feel unsafe at home, period, and that's why there is Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. Simply Safe is where you go. SimplySafe.com/Adam and get a break. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back with Tom Arnold in the news right after this.